Hi, I'm Bill Kristol. Welcome to Conversations. I'm joined today by Joe Trippi, veteran Democratic operative and strategist, famous for the Howard Dean campaign, taking Dean from 1% to leading the field. to leading the field by the end of 2003, and then third in Iowa, and that was the beginning of the end there in 2004. And then Jerry Brown's excellent campaign for governor in 2010, people thought that couldn't happen, to come back for a guy who'd been governor, 25 years before. Doug Jones' campaign in Alabama in the recent special election. So anyway, won some campaigns, lost some campaigns, but all, really for our purposes, a very shrewd analyst of the Democratic Party and of American politics. And always enjoyed being with you on TV and speeches, and now we're here. So you're a Democrat. We're speaking just mid-March, March 15th, I think it is. What's going to happen? You know, it's everyone wants to know who's the nominee going to be, or at least what's the dynamic? How should one think about this next 12 months in the Democratic Party?
I think the whole race changes if Joe Biden gets into the race. It's still kind of a question mark, at least today in mid-March it is. And if he does, I think it totally changes the dynamics in the race. Right now you see a lot of these candidates trying to sort of maneuver and position against each other, who's the most progressive or who's the youngest or who's the new idea person, maybe positioning against another progressive, but not necessarily the vice president if he gets in. I think that all changes.
So you think he's a big enough figure that it just becomes a different race?
Yeah, I think that it could be a very good thing for someone like Beto. For Joe Biden to get in and sort of position as the old new kind of dynamic in the race, whereas others, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, will be trying to position then not against each other as progressives, but against him as sort of the centrist establishment Democrat, and I'm the progressive that can not only defeat him but win against Trump. So I think what happens is right now there's we're on our way to 18, 19, maybe over 20 candidacies, three or four that I'm pretty sure are going to get in but haven't announced yet, who are more interested in sort of positioning and contrasting with each other. The one person I think changes that is Joe Biden. If he gets in, that starts changing the way they position. Reminds me a lot of how Gary Hart ended up positioning totally differently than the rest of the field against Walter Mondale in 1984. I know I'm dating myself, but
okay. Well, you were involved.
I think that I think it starts to reposition a lot of these candidacies.
I mean, I guess Biden is like Mondale in being a former vice president who's running 4 years after his vice presidency. Mondale had lost in AD as vice president. Biden won twice with Obama, so it has that difference. But I guess that's a pretty good comparison in a way.
Yeah, well, look, no vice president in my lifetime has ever sought, former or sitting, has ever sought the party's nomination and not received it, not one. Which somehow gets lost on the other people out there is that, you know, Herbert Walker Bush won his nomination, Al Gore won the nomination. Doesn't mean you win the presidency.
Right.
But there hasn't been, in the modern era, I don't know how far you'd have to go back. I'm not sure there ever was one, right. but you start off with real strength in the party. And Carter Mondale, Mondale arguably was trying to come back 4 years after a very unpopular president at the time, not former president, not just writ large across the political spectrum, but even in his own party. I mean, Ted Kennedy had and the progressives had primaried him.
And he lost pretty badly to Reagan.
Right. And so, you know, Joe Biden's the vice president of Barack Obama, who may be unpopular in certain quarters, but within the Democratic Party, that's night and day. I mean, his popularity and Biden's ability to connect himself to that presidency, which is still very popular in the party, they're detractors. So I just think in a lot of ways, he may be stronger than people think. And I went back and checked. Right about now, Fritz Mondale was at 38% of the vote. John Glenn, astronaut hero, was in second at 31. And no one was thinking about Gary Hart, the right. young kind of get rid of these old guys. We need new ideas, new vision. So when you start to, you know, and Jesse Jackson was in that race. George McGovern was in that race. Alan Grant, a bunch of senators and for at that time, very progressive. Cranston was running on the nuclear freeze. Right. So I see a lot of, I know it's, you know, we're supposed to be talking about 2020.
No, that's interesting. That's an interesting
analogy.
But
I think there's some lessons. Not that it's going to be repeat itself, but I think there's some lessons to be learned from some of these races where I think people looked at a vice president who was in the 30s in the national polling and, you know, and did they actually rise as we got closer and closer to Election Day? Yeah, we got 49% of the vote in Iowa. Gary Hart got 16.
And that launched him. Isn't that crazy?
Because everybody went into, okay, much like, by the way, 2008, everybody went into, okay, we know Mondale's going to be one of the two. Who's going to be the other? And is it John Glenn or Alan Cranston or, and it turned out to be Gary Hart. And once we knew who the other one was, bam. In 2008, everybody assumed Hillary's going to be one of the two. The real question was, is it going to be Edwards or Obama? Who's going to challenge her for the nomination? Obama wins Iowa.
Let's go back and forth here.
The
obvious contrary arguments are, well, it's a new era. That I mean, the narrowing to two after Iowa, and certainly after New Hampshire, is a function of old media, old fundraising. You couldn't have had more. Everything dries up for the other candidates in terms of attention and money. And now we're in a world of social media and online fundraising, and these candidacies have different lanes, so to speak, and this analogy doesn't work. But you seem to be more convinced that sort of being the former vice president gives you more oomph than the conventional wisdom, I think.
Well, I think he's well-liked in Iowa. Has a lead now, you know, whether he can hold on to it. I mean, it's not a give me. He's got to fight for it if he does get in. But more to your point, look, I think there's four or five candidates in this race right now who've already shown enough prowess in online fundraising and things that they'll have. They may have enough money to go the whole way before Iowa even gets here. Mm-hmm. No one's ever gotten out of the race because they've lost and didn't think they could win the next state. They get out of the race because they don't have the money to continue. I mean, at least in my experience, that's always been the case. So I think, yeah, there'll be four or five, maybe more candidates who can continue after Iowa. That's not the problem. I think even though, yes, we're in a different era and social media means something and the way that media covers things is different, but there's some other realities. We used to have every major mainstream media outlet having somebody embedded in every one of the campaigns. That's not going to happen. First of all, in this new era, they can't afford to do it. There's no way they're going to be 18. There's going to be Joe Biden will have somebody following him around. Bernie probably will. Beto, maybe. I mean, but at some point, right. Six or seven of them are going to be out there in zone coverage, right? I mean, who's in Iowa that can get over to cover Delaney's thing, right? So that's one. Two, the thing I'd really caution about, having been through this a lot, is there's always unintended consequences in those early states. I can give you a scenario. Okay, you're Kamala Harris. You're confident that you're going to do well in Iowa, and you're spending the bulk of your time in South Carolina and California, all thinking, yeah, I'll even if I stumble, I'll be able to pick it up there. Well, okay,
South Carolina presumably because of the African American,
yeah, and where she's
and California because she's
yeah, so she does that. Biden wins. Beto takes second in Iowa. Good luck. I mean,
so you think
the Gary Hart rocket ship takes off.
You think that old dynamic holds? I mean, I guess that's the key I see in your
story,
which I tend to agree, actually. But a lot of people would say, no, it used to be that way, the incredibly fast narrowing. and the guy who cleverly thinks Rudy Giuliani famously. And, well, you know, I'm going to wait till after the first four primaries to really find a state I'm good in. And by the time the first four primaries are gone, no one's interested in anyone who didn't win or play
right.
second
and
in
first
the first four
all,
primaries.
The other thing that we know about Democrats right now, in all the polling, is the number one thing that they're focused on is electability. So here are two or three people took first, second, and third in Iowa. They're rolling into New Hampshire. We're all focused on them. The person I was interested in took fifth. It's not, it, you know, there are, some, I mean, and by the way, that goes back to the Dean experience. So Dean had more money online than anybody on the planet. We'd set every record there was at the time. We had more money than any of the other candidates at the time going into Iowa. We take third in Iowa. And we had some other problems, but I mean, but the famous watch how fast you fall and why. It wasn't because of the gaffes. It wasn't. It was, in my view, the one person, there's only one person in, that I've seen in modern politics that the party was more less terrified of having been reelected than Donald Trump. And that was George W. Bush. So electability, they loved Howard Dean. They loved us being against the war, and they loved the supporting civil unions, which back then was a funny thing. But there were deep questions about whether we could actually were we electable. In fact, all the rest of the field, that's what they were doing to Howard Dean. So yeah, the gaffe leads helps fuel that, but at the same time, no, John Kerry. War hero, was for the war, the pragmatism starts to come in because of George Bush, not because of Howard Dean and John Kerry, but because of Bush and the fear that he was reelected, but the fear of that made the party start to move towards a more centrist, more pragmatic, if you will, not necessarily centrist, but figure, but on the war certainly. And a couple of those other really important issues that people were with us on. So I just think that what's going to happen is that I'd put it this way, I could be wrong, but I would do both things then. In other words, you got to fight for a top tier finish. I mean, I'm not talking necessarily win, but a top tier finish in Iowa and New Hampshire. To assure all the foundation that you're laying down in places like South Carolina or Super Tuesday or California are actually going. I can tell you stories about the people who have evaporated by making that. Al Gore being another one of those. He thought Dukakis would win Iowa and New Hampshire. He'd be the Southerner waiting down in the Southern Super Tuesday. 1988. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
But what happens is, no, Dick Gephardt wins Iowa. Dick Gephardt goes south, and he's winning enough moderate centrist Democrats, white Democrats, away from Gore, that Dukakis and Jesse Jackson actually win most of the states, most of the delegates. And we never really would have heard from Al Gore again had Bill Clinton not in 92. So I just think there's certain dynamics.
I guess it's
dynamics.
True. Is it true? I'm thinking about this. No one has been nominated by either major party who didn't either win or place second in Iowa.
Yeah.
I think that's right. In the modern era, maybe Bush was third in 80, I can't remember, but or New Hampshire. You certainly have to be 1-2 one of those states, and often in both of those states, right? I mean, Trump was second in Iowa and first in New Hampshire, and that's been the pattern generally. Obama won Iowa in 08 famously.
I'm just saying that I think they're even more important in this era and in this calendar. That's with California moving up, I think they're much more important.
So the slingshot effect's even more than it used to be, not less.
Yeah, because it's going to happen
so
fast.
I think I'm sort of tempted by that view, but I'd say that's a minority. I mean, I think the conventional view, maybe not among the pros like you, but among the reporters following it, therefore often they're wrong. I mean, they get entranced by the 16 candidates, and Beto's going to be strong in Texas, and so he doesn't have to do that well in the first two. But your basic line is, no one in Texas wants to vote for you if you ran seventh in Iowa and fifth in New Hampshire, right?
Well, if this thing becomes Biden and Bernie out of Iowa and New Hampshire, I don't know what's going to happen in Texas, but I'm pretty sure You know, maybe Beto can run as a favorite son there. Maybe
the moderates go to Biden and the radicals go to Bernie.
Yeah. If Biden's not in the race, the one guy I think who's got, you know, real problems is Bernie. And it's because everybody else can take from him. And even somebody like Beto, who's sort of a, you know, more centrist character in the race, there are a lot of young people that are going to be, who probably were for Bernie in the last election, that are going to look favorably on a guy like Beto. So Elizabeth Warren's going to try to crowd some of his progressive vote. I mean, there's something to, if he turns out to be the front runner because Biden doesn't go and he's up there by himself, I think that doesn't mean he cannot win it. I'm not saying that, but I think I can see every candidate thinking, okay, how do I get just a little piece of that? And if they all get a little piece of it, he starts having real trouble growing, which he already, I think he showed real signs of exhibiting in 2016. He really had trouble getting traction in minority communities. It's very tough to get our nomination without having some strength there. And he had trouble, again, maybe because of Hillary, getting traction among women. And now he's up. There are women in this race, not just one. There are young people in this race who are younger candidates who are going to argue that it's time for a new generation and new ideas. And it's time for us to get rid of the people who got us into these problems. I mean, all these things are going to be there. And each of them, even the people that you don't necessarily think are in his lane, can take a piece of his support.
I like the 84 analogy. I 76 is somehow the one that was in my mind, which is a very big field against a fairly weak incumbent president, in this case Gerald Ford, because he'd never been elected, but objectively you might say an underdog, in the way that Trump probably is. We can get back to that in a minute. And in 76 you get the one time really in modern, I'd say really the only time in modern history where truly someone who starts out at 1% in the year before wins the nomination.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty amazing with Carter.
Yeah.
Dean almost did it, and others have almost done it.
Well, there's that. That's really...
So that's sort of the argument there is you get a big enough field, you get a fractured vote, no real front. I guess the difference is 75-6 had no one like Biden or Armando, right?
Yeah.
It's a bunch of senators. I think Humphrey ended up maybe coming in late as a former vice president to use, but I think he comes in very late, if I'm not... Maybe he's already...
Yeah. I don't remember
not
that
well,
one.
But I mean...
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it's like Birch Bayh and Udall, whoever it is, and Fred Harris, and I don't know, a million. I mean, they're sort of footnotes in history. At the time, they were major figures. I mean, just the way, certainly as major as Harris or, you know, Sanders or
Warren. I'd even go, John Glenn was not a slouch
right,
in 84. I mean, we're talking the movie The Right Stuff was out.
Yeah.
Astronaut hero, senator
from a major state.
From a major state at 31 today in the polls.
Just striking. I mean, in that cycle. Never run.
Yeah, and so that's all I'm saying. I mean, I just think
I think you're saying too. So you're saying both underestimate the former vice president, but also I'm very the reason I like the 84 thing is that it does become Mondale Hart, not Mondale Glenn. That sort of feels right to me. That if Biden is out there as the front runner. The alternative is not another guy his age.
That's what I'm saying. It could be turned generational and not ideological. I'm not saying, that's what happened in 84. Alan Cranston, the senator from California, was running on the nuclear freeze.
Right.
And he moved into second over Glenn. And so you've got this, they were all fighting sort of an ideological fight. And there was one guy who is basically saying Mondale, Cranston, Glenn, these old guys,
I think his heart didn't disagree with Mondale on
right,
much,
right.
Right?
It's time for new ideas, fresh thinking. I was working for Mondale at the time, where's the beef? So we started going after him. By the way, you see that with Beto, and with sort of how people are going after Beto today. He's got plenty of time to put meat on the bones, but I'm just saying, but it's right. Very fascinating to me to see the, and maybe I'm overthinking it because I lived through that one, and so too close to it, but, uh, But I would not underestimate those early states. I think they may be much more important than a lot of the punditry and people suspect.
I'd say the punditry is often focused more on the progressive lane and the moderate lane, and somehow everyone vaguely assumes it's got to be a progressive and a moderate. What's
well,
your thought of that?
Because that may have been the last two wars. It's all about who's in this fight. And I do think there's a feeling of generational change in the party. I mean, we saw that with Pelosi. I mean, with sort of some of the newer members wanting to see if they could replace the speaker. That didn't go very far, but. That inertia is definitely in the. I mean, there's two different things going on in the party right now. I think one is the ideological divide that always happens, by the way, in both parties when you don't have the presidency and you're going to have a whole bunch of candidates out there fighting over what the direction the party should go in. And the other one, I think, is a generational divide or argument in the party that we're also starting to see. We're starting to see the first inklings of it, but I think that could really emerge in this election, in the primary season.
And what about the ideological divide? How steep is it? How serious is it? People like me who would like to have a Democratic nominee that would be at least plausible for Republicans to consider voting for, or worried about the AOC, Omar side of the party? Are we overdoing how powerful that side is, or?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think, look, you've got that going on in both parties, too.
Yeah, well, we don't want to happen to your party.
Yeah,
to our party,
and it could, but, you know, what I'm saying is that's part of what the presidential nomination fight's going to be about. I mean, there's no problem in either party having, you know, a representative from the Bronx who feels differently about it than a representative in Texas does and represents that and fights for it. What's unusual about today is that, you know, the Senate doesn't, under normal circumstances, exude the partisanship that it's been exuding, you know, the last two, three years. And we haven't had very rarely had a president that polarized like Trump. Now there's two ways we can go as a country: further polarization by both sides, which I do not think is going to serve us well. But hey, we could go that way. Both parties are capable of it, and on the other hand, it is a national campaign that's going to go through Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, all these places. And one of these 18 to 22, whatever it is, candidates is going to emerge. And that is going to be the fight over the direction of the party. Barack Obama took the Democratic Party in a direction. We all signed on and went for it. Everybody can argue whether it was good or bad. I thought he was a good president, but, you know, I'm not going to argue with the people watching right now about that. Trump took over the Republican Party and took it in many ways in a completely different place than it's been on a bunch of different things. And hey, when that happens, you got to decide. Right now, both parties in a lot of ways, except from some very marginal districts or states, the incumbents are more afraid of being primaried in their own party, particularly in the Republican Party, which is why he has such a strong hold on them. Could that happen in the Democratic Party? Yeah. Will there be people in different wings, you know, trying to garner enough support so we took over, we put our person in? Of course. I think what tends to happen with the Democratic Party through my long history in it is in the early stages, purity is really exciting. Howard Dean, people I've worked for, and as we get closer to actual votes in caucuses and primaries, there tends to be, particularly when it's somebody like Trump or Bush, and even Reagan, Mondale Hart fight, I think a lot of Democrats in the end started to move back to Mondale. They were worried about the, you know, whether this young, unknown Gary Hart could stand up and fight with Reagan. They weren't so sure Mondale could, but that was, so I think we get more pragmatic as this thing moves forward. And so, you know, if it does turn into a Biden-Bernie, I'm not sure. I would argue the vice president starts to benefit from that kind of a divide. None of this means Joe Biden's a sure thing to win the nomination. I'm just saying, hey, someone tell me when a sitting or former vice president, you know, went out and wasn't. Not saying it, even if you go to your equation about Humphrey getting in late in '76. Not sure he really ran, but he was still a player. You know, he still impacted things. Yeah. It's not going to be Biden's going to fall out of the sky. I just don't see that happen.
That's interesting. And what about the other, I guess, conventional wrap? And again, this is all just, this is analytical. I mean, regardless of who we might prefer, and I don't know who you would honestly, but maybe you don't know who you would exactly, but. I guess the other rap on Biden is just he's run for president twice, and it's sort of both of them were total fizzles. And so, but that, you think that sort of misses the point? I mean, that once you're an ex-vice, once you've been vice president for 8 years,
it's a different situation. Yeah, if he's been vice president to Barack Obama over 8 years, he's going to have some support. He's going to have some ability. Look, I think, as I said, it's tough to win our nomination without some way into winning the votes of the minority community. Who are the candidates in this race who've proven that they or have some, you see the path for them doing that? Well, I could see Joe Biden having a path to doing that. There are some, like Elizabeth Warren, I'm not talking about their positions on civil rights or any of that, right. But can she do it? Bernie had real problems succeeding at that, and had he succeeded at it at all, I mean, he would have been the nominee in 2016. The other thing about Iowa, just going back to that, because you and I talked about it a bit before, it's not just the unintended stuff of you having a plan and doing your strategy right. I mean, in 2004, let's move up from all my 1980 stuff, but to get to, you know. Think about the John Edwards campaign. I'm not talking about John Edwards in 2008 and the various problems and misjudgment and insane stuff. But 2004, he does everything right.
Right. Comes from nowhere as a one-term senator to be takes
second in Iowa to John Kerry. He's done everything
in
right.
In a good field. I mean, a field with...
Oh, with
Lieberman.
Dick Gephardt, who had won Iowa, and was beloved there. Howard Dean, who was taking over the lead, all these things. He takes second to John Kerry. Look, ten times out of ten, everybody goes into Kerry won, Edwards second. Kerry won, Edwards second. Let's go to New Hampshire.
And that is then Mondale Hart.
Yeah.
Edwards is the exciting young guy. Kerry's been around a long time. Yeah. And does the upstart have a chance to beat him?
Yeah. Right. Edwards takes second. It's him. No. One thing he didn't count on, I didn't count on, a whole lot of people didn't count on, Dean screams. The story isn't Kerry wins, Edwards takes second. It's Kerry wins, Dean screams. Kerry wins, Dean screams. All the way into New Hampshire. Where the press is following us all over... the Dean campaign all over New Hampshire, like hundreds. We had cameras from Japan on us, you know, doing the Kerry
Woody
wins,
scream.
Dean screams. Yeah. and John Edwards, who had this brilliant plan, executed it, had a great caucus campaign in Iowa, comes out of nowhere to take second place, is just walking with, you know, nothing. Same thing happened to him in 2008. Obama wins.
Iowa upset.
Edwards takes second.
Yeah, people forget that. Edwards was second and Clinton
right,
was third.
Right. Beats Hillary Clinton. No, the world's decided she was going to be one, there's going to be another, so, you know, now he wouldn't have lasted long for other reasons, but right. I'm just saying it's I would just, my experience has been repeatedly that those early states matter, not necessarily in who ends up getting the nomination, but in how the rest of the, how everything else plays out. How does South Carolina play out? How does California? How does Super Tuesday? Who are the people that are going to have the focus? Whose social media and online stuff goes to zip once people, like frankly, Dean's did. They gave us a shot. If we had, I think, won New Hampshire, I think people would have stayed. I mean, a lot of our supporters would have stayed with us. But once we didn't come back from it there, it just really went away quickly. Now, there's that same group will today listen to Howard Dean. I mean, he can still communicate with them, I'm endorsing this candidate. It matters a lot. But in terms of starting to get pragmatic, we need to win this thing. I want to make sure we beat Trump, which is going to be like on a scale of 0 to 10, if W was a 10 on that mm-hmm. scale, Trump is going to have it be, a 30. I think if you aren't performing early in those states, I think you're going to start losing support pretty quickly. Now, look, Kamala Harris takes third in Iowa. She can go on, win South Carolina. I mean, but I don't think you can afford in this large a field. It may not just be who takes first and second. It may be just, I don't want to be fifth. I don't want to be fourth, maybe.
Yeah. Well, history would again suggest the top three is the narrow.
That's
widows
what I'm saying. Yeah.
After that. I mean, you did the Jerry Brown campaign in 2010, and now everyone's, of course, takes for granted. Well, of course, he was governor for an additional 8 years and was a pretty successful governor by a lot of people would say. But that wasn't, that was also an older, you might say, not quite like Biden, but I mean, sort of an older candidate coming back. So what was the dynamics of that gubernatorial race?
I was terrified. That Jerry would call, because Jerry never called up and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you think?" It's like the night before you get a call saying, "I'm announcing tomorrow." so it's like.
So what was the situation in 2010? Schwarzenegger's finishing up.
Yeah, the celebrity governor Schwarzenegger.
That hadn't worked out so great.
Yeah, lots of problems in the budget, term, in the state, in the second term.
And Brown is what then? He's
Attorney General. Attorney General. Gavin Newsom was the odds-on young, new, visionary front runner. I mean, he was running for governor. And Meg Whitman, who was the CEO of eBay, multi-billion-dollar, successful, beloved company. I mean, it's got –
right.
It's not –
polluting, it's not polluting, not, yeah, it's the, not, the it's, San Francisco
yeah,
Bay.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's not. Yeah, she, really highly regarded CEO, is running as the Republican.
She won the Republican primary pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm sitting there going, okay, Jerry's going to run for governor. I'd done his races for AG, and I'm thinking, governor in 75. For two terms, Secretary of State for two terms, Attorney General for two terms, Mayor of Oakland for, I think, two or three terms. I can't remember. So from 1975 to 2010, talk about we've had a recall to throw the politician governor out to get the celebrity Governor Arnold. We've got this CEO. We've got this young, vibrant Gavin Newsom. And I really thought when I went into the first research and focus groups and talking to voters that I was going to get, that guy's been around forever.
I mean, at that point, Brown is 70-ish.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And old news, been around forever. We don't need another career politician, whatever which we see a lot of going into Trump's election. I just remember we went in and said, let me read you Meg Whitman's bio. And we didn't sugarcoat. I mean, we did not diminish it. It was a glowing, stellar biography of a woman leader who had led a multi-billion-dollar company from its founding, created thousands of jobs, et cetera.
And this was in focus groups. You would read the biography.
And people were just like, you'd start reading it and they'd go, no. And what's wrong with it? No, we did that with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was new. He had been outside of government, didn't know anything about how to run a government. I don't want to be, we have to put training wheels on. Please, no, I'm not doing that. Hmm. Then you go, well, what about this young new Gavin Newsom guy, and lieutenant, you know, who's going to run for governor? No. I just want somebody who knows where the light switches are and knows how government really works and has a chance to solve these problems. So then you go, like, we talked to him a little bit more, and I'd be getting ready to hear about Governor Moonbeam and all the stuff. It was instead us saying, but when they'd say, no, I love his experience. Yes, he knows how everything in government works. Look at all the jobs he's had. And you'd go, but what about Governor Moonbeam? No. He'll know how to get things done. It was like, so, which is another reason, by the way, when I look at where we're at with the celebrity president, the celebrity apprentice president who shows up, who I think a lot of people would argue doesn't really understand how government works, even if they agree with some of his positions on things, that's not how we should be doing it. I do wonder if while everybody else, and by the way, the activists.
Did Brown have a primary against Newsom? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought maybe Newsom yielded to it.
Didn't. No, he did. It was a fight for a while, and then he dropped down into the lieutenant governor's race once he realized.
But it was a fight for a while.
They probably went into the focus. They probably saw the same thing. I mean, I don't know. I haven't talked to Gavin about that.
Right.
But yeah, no, his ascendancy to the governorship was delayed by 8 years because of this dynamic. I think if the state had been hungry after Schwarzenegger for more newness, more, you know, outside the box thinking, Gavin was it. I mean, it would have been I think that would have been a real, could have been a real general election fight over those kind of ideas. But no, that was not what the state wanted. It turned out Jerry Brown was exactly what the state wanted. And by the way, he's done a pretty, I'd argue he's done a pretty good job. They made the right decision. But now looking at the fix we're in nationally, are we in a, this again goes back to the Biden thing. By the way, I'm not carrying water for Biden. No, I'm just trying to I'm thinking.
This is good, because it's contrary to the more conventional view that, you'll want a contrast with Trump. You want the 45-year-old.
Yeah, the contrast is.
You're saying the contrast is the opposite.
Contrast is dad, who's going to like bring us together and knows how it works.
Right.
And I'm not doing the man, the female. I mean, I'm not getting in the gender thing, but I mean, it could be mom. But I'm just saying, I think more. Who knows how to make this stuff work? Who's going to actually try to bring normal back in terms of how we talk to each other and lead the country and knows how government works. Well, there may be others in the race that reach that place. It could be, and by the way, it could be Beto. It won't be dad, but I mean, it could be somebody like that. But I think one of the natural fits for, if that's what the country's legitimately looking for, which is the opposite of Trump, no one would accuse him of being any of those things. So is it the ideological opposite? Is it opposite? Is it and I'm just saying, so I wouldn't discount in any of this. And by the way, I still wouldn't be amazed if Biden doesn't run. I would not be at all. So all this then goes to the rest of the field. Is there somebody in that field who can emerge to lead the country, who isn't just positioning against the field on but actually can sort of, reflect off Trump in a way that there are some real new ideas and things necessarily. I'm not putting anything against those, but yeah, I can get them done. Here's how I would do it. I think it's going to matter a lot to people.
But I assume Biden's going to run because I assume Bloomberg wouldn't have gotten out unless he thought Biden was going to run.
I've talked to people around Biden who all think he's going to run, and think he's 95% there. And every single one of them, many of them who I consider great friends, tell me that the last time the night before they thought he was going to run, and the next day they woke up and he didn't.
But I do
and
think
so
no
like
else,
while they're sure and they are and they're putting things together, sure. et cetera.
We've all known people who backed off.
That's all I'm saying. I don't know.
Don't you think it doesn't seem to be that anyone else in the field right now or in the likely field over the next month or two, if Biden doesn't run, really fits that bill. And I wonder if Bloomberg at that point does rethink, or do you, because he would also be the other one who would be the guy who actually knows how to govern and has a pretty impressive record. Do you think Bloomberg is too tough a sell, though, in a Democratic primary? Do you think he has Biden's strengths, or is he just too much of a...
I mean, I think it's tougher. Yeah, I don't think he naturally fits some of that. I mean, it's certainly, I think Biden just starts off with a lot more, and you know, I mean, I think I think there's several candidates in the field that I think could. I don't mean in the Biden way, but who could really, exude that sort of, well, what I love so much about Doug Jones in Alabama was his real authentic ability to convey, we've got to come together, find common ground.
Do you think that theme, even in the primary, I guess what I'm struck by this conversation, and I think you will be right, but it is contrary to a fair amount of Washington conventional wisdom, which is the come together, I can govern theme could actually win a Democratic primary against the, you know, I'm more progressive and more woke and more and hate Trump even more than everyone else, which sort of is where some of the debate over the last month has felt like it was going on the
among the
congressional types.
I think that that's definitely out there, and it may win. And if it does, then, you know, I think we're going to end up being a much more polarized place than we are today. And that doesn't mean the Democrat can't win the presidency, and that there'll be a whole bunch of people out there hoping that that was all just campaign rhetoric and that they're going to moderate a little, like a lot of us were hoping was true with Trump, and turned out not to be the case. But I still believe, I mean, from my look, and that's an interesting thing because, you know, Doug Jones, Connor Lamb did not have primaries. I mean, if you look at some of the places where we actually did bridge that, when a lot of the, look, the three groups out there to me, having been out there last cycle, there's a significant group of Republican women, a significant group of younger Republicans, and a significant group of college-educated Republicans. I mean, those three groups who really do not agree with where the party's gone.
So this is general election dynamics now. Yeah.
And they really want, I mean, I'll tell you, I was where they literally will say things like, particularly the women, I cannot believe I'm saying this, but I can't say the word. I'm thinking that maybe for the first time in my life, Democrat, I'm going to vote for Democrat, right? I mean, like, literally, they can't stand even to say it.
Maybe that's an Alabama thing, more. But,
No, but they are.
They did vote for Doug Jones.
Right. No, that's my point. And so, look, I think there's a real opportunity for the Democratic Party here and for the candidacies out there. Can we appeal to that group? And I don't think it's going to be by being the other side of the spectrum on anger and my way or the highway on an issue. Either you're for me exactly the way I want to do healthcare, or you're not a real Democrat. Okay, that could happen. I mean, I'm not saying it won't, but if that's what we produce after going through this, through all of this, I think, you know, I worry much more for the country than I do today. I would say that my other experience in all this is this process generally works pretty well. People will start talking about the Green New Deal. And I've said, hey, you know, the person who wins on that may actually be the person who not only articulates what the new Green Deal is, but also how it's going to be implemented, how he or she's going to pay for it, et cetera. And what I'm saying is, like, okay, so everybody goes, what is this Green New Deal? And the other side starts to pummel it. Well, it's either going to, it may not be the first three or four people who talk about it if they can't put something together, a real plan together that the average person out there gets and goes, oh, well, yeah, I'm for that. So we'll see how we're real early in the process. And like, what I'd say is, same thing I've seen over and over again. Both parties have this sort of thing where they fall in love with purity. Great, we finally have somebody who's not going to play those games or this or compromise. Well, yeah, we all want our way. The reality is, our whole country was built on, it may be slow compromise, but compromise. We're all somehow, none of us are going to quite get our way. We're going to work on it together. And so I think is there a way to sort of articulate, here's the progressive vision? I mean, if you're progressive, but I really want to listen and figure, and by Beto's doing listen, 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 but is there a way to do this? I don't know the answer to that. I think, like I said, I think Biden, is almost
more naturally.
Yeah, more naturally in that place where
Beto,
he might be able
to. Beto did a pretty good job, you got to say, in the Texas race in 2018.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
48% of the vote in Texas. So
Klobuchar evidently has that kind of reputation in Minnesota. Right. I'm not saying that any one of them. And by the way, you're up against the same problem the Republicans have, the fire breathers. That's where a lot of the energy is. And hey, we need them. I don't mean that, but I'm just saying, like, is that who's going to win that fight? I think the more people hear it articulated, and having worked for one, Howard Dean, and we got pretty close to pulling it off. I would just say repeatedly, this party tends in this kind of situation to start out really excited by the more intense candidacies with sort of more bold ideas, and then as they examine those ideas, and either like with Gary Hart, where's the beef or whatever, I mean, sooner or later they start to get to grind you down. You're going to be in those meetings in Iowa, in these counties, and they're going to ask you real tough questions. And if you just think you can say Green New Deal,
right,
and that's it, that'll work for a while, but it won't work over time. You're going to have a real plan. And that's where I think that some of them will rise to that occasion. This field has got some really, I think, some really good people, talent in it. They'll rise to it. I just don't know which one. And like I said, I mean, Biden's sort of better positioned to not have to rise as far. He's going to have to rise too. Got a lot of things he's going to have to answer.
What, you've been through this a few times, and most people just kind of, watch it from the outside and stuff happens. But from a sort of more analytic point of view, in terms of the year before the voting, so this year, the odd-numbered year, 2019, what would you be looking for? I mean, you took helped Dean get from 0.5% to 30% or something like that before any voting happened, which is sort of, when you step back and think about it, it's a little weird. Like, well, what was happening? Yeah. How come he goes up and John Glenn goes down in 1984? Yeah. And like, it's not like a normal, like a baseball season where, well, one team looked promising and they start off losing 18 of their first 27 games, and you say, okay, they're not as good. But there's no actual games here, but somehow people do go up and down. So explain a little how that dynamic works. And
we did.
Is it fundraising? Is it the media? Is it
It's all of it, skills? And this is where the social media and everything actually does play a really important thing. I mean, like, we did things, like, I remember we, in the middle of the this summer in the cycle, maybe even this spring in the cycle, like, a few weeks, George Bush went on vacation in Crawford, Texas. We ran an ad, $100,000 in the Crawford media market, basically just simply asking the president how he could be on vacation on his ranch while our men were in Iraq. And didn't he think he should be back in the White House? And hey, please, and sent out emails saying, hey, please contribute so we can keep this ad against George Bush up. Well, I think we raised like a million I mean, like that 100,000 raised $1 million for us. It got a lot of press attention. All the networks, all the cable, we're running that. Look at what Howard Dean's doing. I'm not saying but yeah, I think the tactics may be a lot different. Like more close to what we were doing in 2004 that you really haven't seen that much of since. I mean, Obama didn't do that much of that. No. He had the Will I Am. I mean, there were good things. I mean, they took it in a different way and maybe more, quote, more mainstream. And that may have been smarter. I'm not saying that. But I do think you'll see candidates who are down at 2 or 3 thinking about, wait, how can we make a – and, yeah, I told in the Dean campaign, I would sit there and go, guys, we have to think of ideas, but – like, look, you can get attention by pouring gasoline all over yourself too. That's not a strategy for winning the president. I mean, that will get you a lot of attention. You'll be on the news, but you're dead. You're not a candidate. So I think part of this is where's that line? How's it play out? But yeah, I think tactics will be more like, you could see tactics more like what we were doing. I mean, it's sort of.
That's interesting. And for observers, I mean, what matters most, fundraising, debates, are the moments you would look for where things will clarify? When will we sort of be able to say, well, this looks like the 4 or 5 who've emerged from the 18 or 20 as the possible nominees?
Not till Iowa, New Hampshire. I mean, I think we'll think we see it. I mean, right. We'll see it after the debate. Oh, it's these 4 or these 2.
People can surge late, right? Yeah, We've seen that in Iowa. People can move 15 points in the last month.
Dick Gephardt was in dead last with 18 days left to go. Paul Simon was in first place.
In 88.
Dukakis was in second. We were in dead last. I remember Mike Duffy of Time Magazine interviewing me the morning the Iowa poll came out saying we were in dead last. Asked me when were we going to get out of the race.
Wow.
And 18 days later, we won Iowa, which totally screwed up Gore's strategy. I mean, it was Axelrod was with Simon that year. I mean, here. 18 days earlier, Paul Simon and those guys think they're going to win Iowa and they're going to be off to the races with Dukakis. And it turned out to be totally different. And I guess we did probably mess up Simon's ascendancy, whether he had, whether he could have or not.
Right.
But we also messed up Al Gore, who was supposed to be.
Yeah, one forgets how much he was.
He was supposed to be it.
Alternative to Dukakis.
Yeah. And be the Southerner. I mean, the whole reason Super Tuesday was created was to make sure that a Northeastern liberal did not get the Democratic Party nomination.
Again.
And it turned out, that Super Tuesday and those string of Southern states made Mike Dukakis the nominee. It was totally unintended consequences. That's why I'm saying everybody's moving these states up, thinking, oh, this will really. Oh, man, just let me, I've been through it. And that's what I'm saying. It's not just some of the best examples are in the 80s, but they're examples of how Edwards in 2004, 2008, just the way that finish happens is really going to matter.
I mean, I've been struck in this conversation how much you've stressed, and I do this too, I think it's often the case, the kind of continuity in the system. Trump is obviously a break with the past, the first nominee in the Republican side since Goldwater, I'd say, who really ran against his own party and the recent presidents of that party, and the first non-former elected official or cabinet official or president or general to become president. So, I mean, that's a pretty big break. But what would you say to someone who said, well, that's all that's nice about the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2004 even, but we're in such a new world, social media, online fundraising, celebrity politics, Donald Trump's president, it's all the rules are thrown out. I mean,
they are. And I mean, chief among them, just, how so many Americans unwittingly spread bad information on the on each other's candidates. I mean, I see something that says something that Trump's done something, and it looks like a real story, and it's off there, and comes from me. So, Bill, you actually read it, without really thinking too much about it, and both ways. And I think that's the biggest change out there. I mean, look the. Big change has been the money. How can I said, we've talked about this. There are 6, 7, 8 candidates in this race who are going to be able to raise millions and millions. I mean, more money than you need for Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, maybe California. Mess up some of them, but the bulk of them because of the of that empowerment online that we first started seeing in Dean in 2004. That's only grown, and it's even more. It's going to fuel a lot more of these candidates. I do think that that same thing fuels the second place and third finisher in Iowa, right? In other words, so I've built a 18 million or 12 million person digital army out there who's fueled me going into Iowa, and I came in second over 16 of these other people. You know, Bernie won, but I came in second. Well, those 10 million people are going to be energized, send more money. So I do think that that's the only part that I don't think really has changed that much. It doesn't really change the dynamic of those early states, I don't think. After that, yeah, I mean, so now you've got three or four. Maybe we don't go to the normal two. Maybe this does get to three or four people who go all the way down the wire. They have big followings. They can one's the younger new generation, one's progressive, one's which, you know, does open up the usual crazy punditry ecstatic conversation every cycle about, yes, we're gonna finally have a brokered convention.
Yeah, I like that guy. I like that conversation.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, no, we and maybe we'll be having it, but right. But it's still in the end. No,
you're a skeptic about
yeah,
that.
I'm a skeptic about it. I think the biggest one is how the one of the things that I think's happened is somewhere along the way, the notion of citizenship, of us as citizens, I have a responsibility to make sure when I send this thing on that it's that I've actually thought about it, which is really hard with this president. I mean, who's sort of signaling all the opposites of these things. But that's, I think, the biggest, I mean, that's the thing that gives me the biggest fear about this cycle is how social media, the automation of it, bots, cyborgs, the misinformation, and how, but it's not the bots and the cyborgs. It's us. We're not, and on both sides, this is where there are very good people on both sides who do stupid things because they're not thinking about it.
Didn't, in the Jones campaign, you experienced this some, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We had, literally, we were seeing 65,000 automated bot posts an hour. Interestingly, most of them were attacking Roy Moore's accusers as not credible, or as they did attack Jones. About 7% of what we were tracking, because was positive for us, but 93% of it was just. I mean, we're not talking like 10 bots or 10 people in a room somewhere. We're talking about 65,000 posts per hour, all negative, all in support of Roy Moore, either by attacking his accusers or attacking us. The problem is when somebody hires a bot farm somewhere, this is what I'm worried about, is you hire a bot farm and what are we gonna do? Hire a Turkish bot farm? Are we gonna, like, on the other side, we elected, or I mean, never dawned on us, but we weren't going to do that.
Well, the campaigns probably don't do it anyway. It's some super PAC that you don't control.
Right. So what I'm saying, though, is what we, right. So that could break out. And the other thing is what we did was, it was a special election. We did have, we raised, I think, $22 million online. And so we had the money to go back at people that were reading that, so we're getting being delivered that stuff, and go back to them with paid online messages saying, "Hey, here's the, did you know Doug Jones did this?" or positive stuff about us. I don't think it's very long, though. This is my point. That sea change happened, and this didn't happen in 2016. I mean, it happened. And no one really realized it until after. We started to see in 2017, 2018, real weaponization of it. And in everything I've ever seen in this world of politics in the United States, when the other side started running negative ads against you, and we can all, I don't know who did it for, you know, but whoever did it first, trust me, the other side did not say, oh no. We talk a good game about, oh, I don't like negative ads, but guess what? Guess why all the ads are negative? Because it worked. So the problem we have now, and this is the thing where I do think all of us, regardless of party, if we really want to, you know, it's one thing to chase down Facebook and Twitter and everybody and blame them for everything, and they deserve, they were slow to get to this, but it's all of us, and it's going to be operatives on both sides. And do we hold them accountable? I mean, do we somehow say, no, we're not going to, I don't know if the citizenry, if there's enough of it there with no leader. I mean, I think if the president of the United States and, you know, members on both sides were building a narrative about this, but I actually think this could be the equivalent of going to the moon. I mean, how do we get our citizenry to understand that they have some responsibility? I don't necessarily, at least at this moment, see a candidate who's going to take time to explain that to people. One of the things I think is going on is I don't think most people really realize what we're all talking about sometimes when we say, hey, they were manipulated and misleading. It's like, what? Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, I didn't believe any of that. Are you telling me that cost us votes in Mississippi or Wisconsin or something? No one's really explained what each of our responsibility is. And I think that's the thing that would bother me the most or concern me.
Interesting. One last question just about the primary, and then I want to ask about the general quickly. Any something old-fashioned like endorsements matter at all? President Obama, Clinton, I don't know.
Obama certainly would. I mean, there.
Just want to assume he stays out.
When we were in Alabama, the one that mattered the most was Biden. I mean, and believe me, you know, we could have, but no, it's like, you know, who doesn't say. That's what I'm trying to say. So I think some of these candidates, they'll be out there looking for endorsements. I definitely think Obama in the Democratic primary. I mean, I can't remember which poll it was, but it showed that more Democrats now identify themselves. The words that most Democrats identify themselves as, I'm an Obama Democrat.
That's interesting.
Then moderate Democrat. Then liberal Democrat, then progressive Democrat. And I mean, in terms of how we label, I mean, in a poll where they asked, how would you label yourself? Now, I'm sure there are a lot more progressive Democrats than the people who say, yeah, I proclaim myself a progressive Democrat. But what was fascinating to me wasn't even that moderate was second, but that it was an Obama Democrat was
first. And if
first,
Joe Biden runs, do you think, I mean, I don't know, does President Obama feel he should support him or stay out as the former president?
I'm sure he's going to stay out as a former president. But that could get to your question of what happens if it does get down to two people.
And then he says,
and once, the fire, and he feels like, hey, I can make a difference here and I really do want to, I think that, you know, what's really, what I hope happens in this election is that somehow both parties grow up a bit. Which is like also like, yeah, right, you know.
Now we're doing our best to get you a different Republican nominee than Donald Trump.
No, but I mean.
I don't think there's much growing up on our side, you know.
Yeah, well, if we have two parties that go into that, I think it's like I said, we may not be able to come out of it.
What about the general election? So let's just assume Trump beats back whatever, Larry Hogan, and even if Hogan does reasonably well, Trump gets the nomination, as incumbents usually do, and it's, I mean, how, just generally, I mean, where are you on the odds of, on the one hand, he's got a pretty low approval and reelect for an incumbent president. On the other hand, incumbents have won the last three cycles, so.
Well, I mean, if
and with all the caveats, don't know what the economy is going to be and everything
no,
else.
No, but if Larry Hogan or someone like that primary, you know, gets into the primary, I don't think that's good for Trump. I don't mean that Larry Hogan can defeat Trump or the Kasich could or any of the people who might do it. But the fact is no president who's ever been primaried, I mean, they all won their nomination, but none of them went on to win the the president to be reelected.
LBJ didn't even win the nomination.
Yeah,
right?
No. So I'm just saying, I don't think that's good for.
So that wounds Trump, maybe.
It'll wound him. I think he's already really wounded.
Is that right?
Yeah, not because. Look, there's a reason in this economy that he's still at 42 or, you know, right. wherever he is on his favorable this week, or approval this week. It's him.
Yeah.
And I've seen enough of these Republican women, these younger Republicans, these college-educated Republicans. You're even starting to see non-college Republicans, not as much, but some of them starting to bleed off a little bit. They're just, you know, every president, including Obama, exhausts the country by the end of their second term. Everybody's just exhausted with them. Very few, in fact, Reagan was the only one I can think of, who there was mild exhaustion, but not so much that his vice president couldn't both win the nomination and the presidency for one more term. This, I really think, Donald Trump has gotten everybody, or the right components even of his own party, close to that edge 2 years into his first term. I just, you know, now, do we...
Start off with 46.1% of the vote,
right.
you kind of not exactly have a lot of margin of error.
Now, does Schultz get in and run as an independent, and that takes the wrong group of people from Democrats? I mean, all kinds of that kind of stuff, but just sort of on the, do we nominate the angry or just as angry left version of Trump, which I don't see either. I mean, we have progressives, but none of them, I mean, that are running, but none of them are, you know, the mirror of that. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. Could things happen where, you know, you're sitting there after the conventions going, how the hell did the Democrats blow this? Yeah, I'm a member of my party, and yes, there is a chance. Like I said, we tend to become amazingly pragmatic in a way that Republicans don't when I just think Republicans, once they get a win, if somebody's winning, and that's who their party nominee is going to be, they tend to rally behind that instead of trying to stop it if it's the wrong thing. I mean, it's
right.
I don't know enough about both parties. You know,
just the mechanics of the primary system with the winner take all and stuff.
Yeah. Right. You have winner take all. You can't. It's hard. Right. We have proportional more proportional than. And I just think, and we tend to be, like I said, you can have an anti-war candidate running, and everybody loves that he's against the war. She's against the war, but. Are we gonna? Can we really afford to have George Bush reelected? No. Okay. I'll vote for John Kerry in the primaries. That happens a lot more
party. I was listening to you as you've been saying this and thinking, even in 08, which I guess is the contrary example to some degree, one forgets that President Obama or candidate Obama worked pretty hard to be fairly centrist. I mean,
right.
and disavow Jeremiah Wright when he had to and all that. But secondly, Hillary Clinton actually almost beat him precisely with this argument. I mean, having won election and re-elected the presidency, we all now think Barack Obama's super candidate. But in fact, at the time, and I remember this as a McCain supporter, the conventional view was, not without some reason, Obama's to the left, first African-American. I mean, he'll be a tougher sell to swing voters. And I do think that's what helped Hillary to win all those huge, big state primaries, and she ended up with as many votes as Obama. I mean,
yeah, but and here's the other ingredient: if that had been George Bush's reelection election,
yeah,
would the party have taken the chance on Barack Obama?
That's interesting.
This is what I'm saying. There's a
it's a different in a reelect, a, yeah.
Right? People tend to think about like what's the happened last time. Well, yeah, but like, no, what I'm talking about is go back and look when George W. Bush was just so feared in our party, and how we went from Howard Dean to John Kerry pretty quickly,
right
as we started to worry about his reelection. Donald Trump is that. Reagan there was fear of that, but not nearly like with George, with W, right. And not nearly, I mean, neither one of them are even close to Trump. Yeah, right. Yeah. You've had, that's what I'm saying. I mean, which may also be kind of like a little bit different when we talk about when a Republican won the presidency, and I mean, why you guys go, you know, because it may have been in years, I'm not thinking, you know, but in years where the threat wasn't as, it, you know, was a, right. You know, oh, it's going to be Obama, we can afford to do that, or whatever, you know. Whatever.
No, but Romney was more centrist. Yeah. They defaulted the Republicans against incumbent Democratic presidents to a more centrist candidate, Dole and Romney. I'd say the same.
Yeah, that's
I mean, neither one, but,
yeah, but I'm just
it
saying,
seemed
so maybe
like they were more plausible than.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe you do have the same dynamic, and the only time we see it is when there's somebody in office who we so fear that we're going to become more pragmatic. And in our, the thing is, at this stage, we're always enthralled with the guy who's against the war, for civil unions, the Green New Deal, et cetera. And then they get asked a lot of tough questions. And the other candidates go like, are running around saying, how are you going to pay for it? And all this kind of stuff and whittle away. And by the time you get to Iowa and New Hampshire, there's a surprise, you know, and it may be this, like I said, the surprises. No, they did vote for the Green New Deal, but it was the eighth person who talked about it. And it was because they actually had a legitimate plan that made people go, yeah, let's do this.
Or some other
which
issue
would
entirely.
Be good. Yeah. That's, I mean, I'm not even,
rises and someone else addresses it well, and suddenly someone else becomes the Gary Hart type. I mean, I think that's a very shrewd insight of yours, that if you have a Mondale type, you sort of, the system kind of wants a Gary Hart-like alternative.
Yeah.
It wants the generational
That's,
option, so to speak.
Yeah,
and that often works,
you know,
or the outsider option, or some kind of option.
Right, it wasn't like Mondale was some, like, centrist, pro-business Democrat. I mean, you know, it's...
Right.
I just think I say this now, I've been saying, you know, like, look, I think the Green New Deal, it could be the candidate who actually figures out how to articulate a real plan. So it's not about being for the Green New Deal. Green New Deal may be the thing that does do it. I'm just saying that it's going to get all these ideas that everybody's going like, are going to get battle tested, and some of them are going to emerge as even Joe Biden's, if he's the nominee, emerges as part of what he's running on. I just don't know which. I think it's way too early, and I can tell you we tend to, and I think this is true of the Republican Party, tend to be enamored with, hey, there's a real conservative, you know, and then you start, well, wait, but Romney might have a better chance. I mean, that's, I'm just saying, I think that dynamic is going to be more powerful in this election than we all think. Not because of this field, but because of Trump, because of how terrifying it is for a Democrat in Iowa or New Hampshire or South Carolina, anywhere in the country. And by the way, a lot of independents and hopefully enough Republicans, from my point of view anyway, that are nominees.
Some of whom could vote in few of whom, I guess, could vote in Democratic primaries if they're independents at least, or in states where you don't declare, Virginia or something. So, Well, that's really been fascinating, and I mean, a huge amount will happen, obviously, in the next year. And, well, unfortunately, this will be preserved online, so we'll be able to see what has – not unfortunately, I shouldn't say, but some we'll be surprised by some things, and some things won't quite – maybe it'll be your – on the other hand, it would be great if this analysis turns out to be totally vindicated. But I think the main thing we need to do is get back together in a year and explain what happened. It's a lot easier to explain what has happened than what's going to happen, right?
Well, like right now, I still don't know if Biden's going to get in, you know, just that kind of stuff. It makes it even difficult to sort of, you know,
maybe
talk
we should
this
get together like in, you know, maybe late in actually 19, where we really could have where there'll be some winnowing and some clarification, wouldn't you say? October, November, we'll have a little more sense.
I'd be happy to.
Great.
Have me back anytime. Enjoyed it.
Joe Trippi, thank you very much, and thank you for joining us on Conversations. Yeah.